I'm your host, Kavya, Director of Product Marketing at LambdaTest, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. We are here to explore an intriguing and transformational topic, Shift Happens, Driving Quality Left, a real-world journey across five teams. Let me introduce you to our guest on the show, Ruslan Strazunic. With over 17 years of experience as an engineering leader, Ruslan has worked with a range of tech startups, ranging from digital healthcare companies, logistics services, and he's applied his expertise in cloud networking, social media, and database management software all across. So today, Ruslan will share insights from his journey of integrating agile testing practices across five different engineering teams, each at varying stages of their quality evolution. So whether you are just starting your shift left journey or looking to fine-tune your approach, Ruslan has actionable insights that will resonate with everyone. Over to you, Ruslan. Please share a bit about your journey in testing space with our audience.
Thank you so much, Kavya. Thanks so much, LambdaXP, for introducing me and for inviting me to this beautiful webinar. I hope this session will be helpful for many of QA folks, like the people who are just starting and people who are experienced, maybe just to revisit a couple of points. And maybe, yeah, I could share my perspective on that. The shift left approach and quality. So I will just introduce myself a little bit and talk who I am. I am originally from Ukraine. I started working in software quality assurance 2007. Good chance I begin my journey with the big outsourcing company in Ukraine, and they had already established a lot of the processes from the beginning. And our first client, or basically the end customer that we worked for, was the Cisco Iron Port company, and they already had a really mature frameworks and approaches in their system, and then everything that we were exposed to were really beautifully organized, and it was very good opportunity to learn from. So over the years and from the beginning, I learned a lot of Python. I had to learn basically everything from the beginning. I had to learn Python, MySQL, Linux, Bash scripting. And I was exposed first time to test automation frameworks. But the caveat was that in that company, they still had been using Waterfall. And that took a lot of time to evaluate all the requirements, proceed with the development, and then with testing. It took basically a lot of time to market since from the requirement stage and then to the development stage. And it often resulted in the big amount of bugs and issues that were just encountered after the process. So we always had like reiteration phases. It was unavoidable that something is not accounted, or some requirements were not properly treated, and which resulted with defects. However, some things were, of course, like the main requirements with Waterfall are fine, and usually it's set and done in the end. I later followed with the more like smaller teams and worked with other different technologies. I worked with Ruby on Rails frameworks. I've worked a lot with Selenium, then I was introduced to Scrum, which was a modern agile framework at that time. I even had a chance to work with like very small team. We didn't have like a Scrum Master, actually, a dedicated Scrum Master. We had just a role. So one of the our developers was a Scrum Master, just by chance. So the team was that small that we had everything organized ourselves, and that was really working really smoothly. I worked as an independent consultant from Ukraine, but then decided to move from Ukraine. I worked 1.5 years in Sweden in a company called Apica. I was leading a team of engineers, and Apica is they're doing monitoring and web performance tools and selling them. It was a pleasure to work in such environment because they already had like enterprise tools and enterprise software that they were offering. But that also a downside that you have to accept that there are some tools that you cannot change them. This is like something that you have to deal with, some legacy old frameworks, the legacy old tools. And you have to support them, make it working no matter what. Even if it's like very old, you still have to support because it may be a core of the software. So we were just like doing maybe some updates on this. In the later roles, I worked also, like then I moved to Berlin. I worked in some digital finance startups with blockchain and banking apps, and then I think was a shift actually to so that was the moment that I realized that there is a strong demand for agile testing, a strong demand for shifting quality left, because it was always a constraint to have enough QA engineers in the team. It was like always some kind of a problem, because I also realized that moving from Ukraine and to Europe, to Germany, to Sweden and then to Germany, I realized that it's a bit of difference in terms of hiring and a bit of a difference how the outsourcing companies work and the product companies inside Europe work. That's like totally different models, because in the outsourcing it's usually possible to hire apply some cost cutting, and the resources or like the engineers provided by outsourcing companies are costing much more cheaper than if you hire the people in Germany, and that means you have to actually compromise, and you have to build really strong teams, and you also cannot replace people because they're not contractors, they're employees, and that is like the moment that I felt like that's there is like a strong need for building quality and building like strong bonding and actually strong approaches to quality assurance inside the team. So building that expertise inside the team is like essential for that. I would be I'm very interested to move forward, and then I think Kavya have a lot of questions for me.
No, this is amazing, Ruslan. I was just listening to and piecing it together, your journey that started from being a system administrator into entering test automation space, and not just working with one kind of industry, right? You've worked across so many different industries. There has been so many different tech stacks that you have used. You started experimenting with Selenium and Python. In fact, teaching yourself those technical skills, right, over the course of 17 years, that's a very impressive journey that you have had. And I'm sure the very first question that I have in right, it's in line to that journey that you just shared with us, which is, what were the biggest challenges you encountered while implementing a shift left approach across different teams with varying levels of maturity?
Yeah, thank you. Great question. So I think one of the biggest challenges is the different levels of maturity and technical knowledge across the teams. Also, another thing is that some teams have been established like previously, and some teams are just maybe they are still waiting for some people to be hired or to start, and they are just, you know, doesn't have a good bonding inside the team. Some teams just coming from different backgrounds, so they may have engineers coming from different backgrounds, and they may have like little experience with automated testing, and some already are proficient, and they maybe know their domain very well. So I think it's very important to assess the team's current capabilities and basically understand where are they standing, what is like the temperature, you know, in the each of the team. And then you can tailor your approach to each maturity, to each group maturity level. And so, yeah, like beginner teams, they probably need some beginning foundational training in test automation tool and how to do manual testing, how to do smoke testing, and so on. And then advanced teams, they need to focus on the integrating performance testing or some kind of more advanced techniques in test automation. And then for them, it's important to have this approaching this testing early in development lifecycle. So have a good CI/CD pipelines and so on. So basically, it's important to have to balance the space of adoption, and it can also feel quite overwhelming for teams. So it's you have to also balance that and avoid overwhelming like those less mature teams with like a lot of, you know, stuff, because you have to also apply, you know, certain techniques with some time and diligence, because if you overwhelm too much with some kind of stuff that they haven't experienced before, and probably you will just not be popular. Like you will just lose popularity, and some teams will just, you know, no matter you how hard you are even trying, but if you're pushing too much, it may be like you can get resilience, and then that's maybe a negative effect of that. So it's always important to keep the good balance. Always hear the feedback. And yeah, approach this like and have some time for that.
This is really interesting. Thank you so much, Ruslan. What stands out is how you know, depending upon the growth stage of every organization, you have to also you know, balance the space of adoption, as you said, according to that. Very interesting point, of course, and navigating that you know, for quality engineers must also require a very tailored approach, right? For every industry, for every growth stage, the engineering leaders, the testing leaders, they'll accordingly have to also tailor it more. That also brings us to the next question, which is, you know, can you provide specific examples of how you empowered teams with necessary tools and training to embrace a shift left mindset as you moved ahead?
Yeah, I can share how I did it in the last place of work. So with Kwandu, by the way, Kwandu is it's a service that allows to book restaurants online. They have B2B and B2C applications. It's like also we have like in Quandu, they offer also widgets. So when you search some restaurant or cafe in Google Maps, you can instantly book the table and time slot from that. And these were also mobile apps. So we had like a lot of plenty of stuff to test. And I introduced Playwright as a unified test automation framework. Or basically, I evaluated that it's a valid test framework that we have to continue on. And we had to, we also had a long history with other test frameworks. And there was a lot of tests already written in Ruby and in Cypress. And there was a decision basically within me, within the teams, and my managers that we moved to Playwright, because it was kind of ticking all of the boxes. And most importantly, it was also enabling us to test single sign-on functionality, which was important to test some other products, and it also fitted like other things as well. So I was hosting interactive workshops to teach engineers how to work, maintain test automation tools, how to write automated tests with Playwright. And basically, even like Playwright is, I can really recommend it. It's a framework that by itself has a very good documentation. So there is a lot of things available online. It has a good support and really great community. So I also like was embracing too that in our team we create comprehensive documentation, that we do even some code samples, and we kind of showcase everything. And was also important that we kind of integrated these frameworks inside the CI/CD pipelines. So basically, we were also sitting with the developers and their leads, their team leads, to show them how exactly these test frameworks are working, how these tests are impacting their changes. Doing like pair programming sessions and mentoring, and which was kind of a way to bridge these knowledge gaps, and that's how we introduce this knowledge, this kind of culture of collaboration.
Thank you so much, Ruslan. I think these are great insights as well as tips that I think every QA manager or engineering leads can implement within their teams. We would also like to understand, how did you navigate the complexities of bringing newly hired engineers and testers up to speed on team-specific shift-left practices? You did speak about the collaboration element, right? So how did you ensure that these newly hired folks are basically up to date or up to speed with the changing practices?
It's good and valid question. So I think it's important to have very good onboarding programs. Mm-hmm. Like it's when you have dedicated people, and then you kind of embrace this kind of culture, you can understand also the necessities of the one who will be just onboarding. And it's important to write this nice documentation and tutorials with specific onboarding steps that can include some practical example of shift-led practices. So we had our new engineers were they were going through a guided task to write some tests or a small feature and integrate it into CI pipeline. So it also started with when we hired new QA engineers in the team. For them, it was also a task to go through the whole bunch of different steps, installing not just the Playwright, but also the previous frameworks, having set all of the environments, every this kind of stuff that they require to test and to execute everything manually. So they had to test everything manually. With developers, it was maybe a bit of different approach because they already had their environment set up. So you just introduced them how to install specific frameworks, how to work with tests. And they were picking up this stuff really quickly because they already had a good programming knowledge. So for them, it was important just to know where they could actually hit. We also did mentorship sessions with QA and senior engineers, and we were ensuring that they could ask questions, receive some guidance. And we also tried to keep documentation, some knowledge bases with some frequently asked questions and best practices. So I think that keeping the knowledge base is really what matters.
Thank you so much, Ruslan. Again, great insights on it. Onboarding can also be a challenge at times, right? I mean, it sounds like you have built a strong foundation within your team so that anyone who joins in can easily transition and, start on taking up newer responsibilities. Moving on to the next question, how did you address the potential for increased pressure on developers when shifting quality responsibility to the left?
So exactly, the shifting quality responsibility to developers, it's some kind of a cultural shift. Mm-hmm. And there is also, I think, in my experience, I also dealt with some kind of a perception that some people I just don't want to tell. It's not something that I kind of share, but I know that at some time I felt like that there is kind of a culture when the developers versus QA and kind of developers, they could feel more mature or more important somehow, and QA less important or less experienced. This is something that I had this kind of teams. I wouldn't name any kind of names or whatever. It's not important, but this is something that I also, I thought it was just me. But then when I went through different conferences and I spoke with many people, it's something actually that happens a lot, and then you have to deal with that, but you have to show that when you are a QA professional, you are not a second citizen, you are not some kind of a less experienced, it's just a different role. So you are, when you're a QA professional, you're also a software engineer, but just your shift or your area of expertise is actually different. So you're not just developing software. I mean, you're developing software, but you're not coding as much. You are the one who's responsible for testing, responsible for releasing, for requirements. And actually QA, maybe many teams, maybe even much more experienced than software dev, and it's something that's reality. And so when you shift quality responsibility, it's also some kind of cultural shift. And I was saying it's just you, the developers have to wear a tester hat. So basically, they are not being a tester. They're not suddenly becoming a different role, okay? But they're just wearing this hat for a moment. So when they require to do some testing work, they just wear this hat. Then when they don't need to test, they just put this hat, you know, in the other side. To reduce this pressure, we emphasized collaborative ownership of quality. So it wasn't just a QA responsibility. So we kind of we were talking a lot about importance of quality, like showcasing some historic examples with, you know, with the cost of effect, with the cost of defects, how the bugs actually costing on different sites when they are very late discovered and when they were early discovered. And that was, kind of a point that most people can understand very easily. We also ensured that these testing tools are easy accessible, that they have easy documentation, like approachable tools, that they have good documentation, that they could be also reduced. And they kind of, when developers feel that there is a supportive environment, and then the teams, you know, can speak the same language, they have, you know, a good collaboration and bonding, but then it's kind of it happens, you know, just naturally that they don't feel, you know, this pressure a lot, and that's something that they understand, that if they are also responsible for quality, is actually much better for them in the end. So it's maybe, you know, in the beginning it feels like a lot of things to care about, and but in the end they feel that they're making some difference, and when they also know just more insight with testing, it's just beneficial for them.
That sounds very interesting, and also resonates a lot with what you just shared, right? Also resonates a lot with what we hear very often at XPCDs, for instance, that quality is everyone's responsibility, including that of developers. And as you rightly said, right, initially, even if there is there is challenge in adoption, from a long-term perspective, it definitely makes more sense to make sure that the developers as well as the testers are equally responsible for the quality. And you know, you also mentioned about making testing tools more accessible. Would it be possible for you to highlight that a bit more? What does that exactly mean?
So first of all, let's say how the tools can be more accessible. I think that means that, let's say in some kind of a team environment or a team space, you usually teams have some kind of a account on GitLab or GitHub. Actually, it's not so important, maybe different names, but that they have the test frameworks inside this repository. It's important that QA engineers maintain the test automation tools and frameworks in a very good shape professionally, applying, you know, best techniques, applying static code analysis tools, applying different tools that check code duplication, like that they care about styling, about reusability of the code. So basically they care about test automation tools the same as on other software, so that engineers, and they don't hide it, so they are very open to the things that they write, that they develop, It's also important not to be shy on this. So when the team of QA engineers is developing some framework, it's also important to show this to the other people. Like, don't be hesitant to demo some features. Even maybe it's not something that required at the same moment by everyone. But if like some developers would know, okay, so there is existing framework that people are already working on, and it's already covering this, this, and that, and they may not need like today, but maybe tomorrow they need like, or the other day. And it's important to demo all this software, like celebrate kind of this also small wins. Like some cases we even had demo of small features of this test framework, so on company all hands. Like we didn't have big like team, but let's say it was very nice when we shared, you know, some little perspective to 100 and more people inside the company. And like listeners were not only just the developers, but also some people working with marketing, with product, with some different stakeholders. They were very interested in that, and they kind of was interesting to know. So as you said, it's gaining the popularity is important basically, and maintaining this everything in good shape is also quite important.
Thank you so much, Ruslan. That really helps. And based on your experience, what are the next steps in the evolution of shift left testing, and how can teams prepare for the future?
Thank you. So I think the next steps, it may include integrating some AI and machine learning into test practices. Like it's becoming possible to predict, prevent defects earlier in the development lifecycle. So teams can also try to adopt predictive analysis to identify high-risk areas of code focused on testing efforts. They also may, they may upskill themselves in some AI-based testing tools. Or maybe I think it's important also to build flexible modular test frameworks, like Playwright. So there are different suggestions for that. So practically, in Playwright, it's possible to identify flaky tests with AI. Suggest fixes. There are also possibility to work with self-healing tests. I guess also it's something that I think is even Lambda XP is I think I have seen the demonstration of these practices inside the website. So it's something that I think gaining popularity a lot. For predictive analysis, it's possible to use static code analysis tools like Sonar Checks or Sonar Cloud. Like these tools give a lot of insights very cheaply, basically. One can also integrate predictive models using Jira API and Python, if you are like knowledgeable on that, using TensorFlow. So basically, as I said, it's also important to also have continuous quality feedback loops. So practically, you can integrate Playwright with GitLab. You have immediate testing during development. I think those tools, it's important also to hear what the market is offering. Can use adaptive test automation frameworks, something like in, I think, Apple Tools is offering AI-driven test script maintenance. I think it's also important to look what is in the market, keep the documentation in good shape, keep the quality of the code in good shape, and try to approach seriously and think about not just the one day you are developing, but also think about future. So it's important when your software, I mean, the test frameworks you're developing is in good quality. You can reuse part of the code, that the libraries are well organized, and then you are always, ready for like next steps, that you can explore some plugins that can be offered on commercial purpose or by communities. Or specifically already tailored applications. I think also for manual testing, I can recommend the Test Team IO. It's a great framework for manual testing for exploratory. I think there are many, many test frameworks in the market. That can help with that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ruslan. That really, encompasses everything. And just to add to for our audience, right, on Lambda test, you can do both manual and automation test, of course. But as Ruslan was rightly sharing, we also, help you with predictive analytics, for instance, through our test intelligence platform. So if you're looking for a platform that could help you analyze, and as well as resolve testing challenges, you could give Lambda test intelligence a try. It has, AI powered RCA, for instance, flaky test detection, as Ruslan rightly said, and this error trend forecasting, for instance. And of course, on top of it all, there is also actionable test insights that testers can get. I think there are a lot of options out there for the testing community to try out, and you've named quite a few of those. I'm sure that our audience would find it super beneficial. Moving on to the next question, how did you measure and track the impact of SwiftLift testing on key metrics like defect rates, time to market, and even customer satisfaction? Because you've worked with quite a few organizations that were also very B2C specific. Yes, over to you.
Thank you. It's kind of a bit difficult question, but there's a wide options to this answering this. So we approached this with implementing dashboards in Jira, and we were tracking defect density. We also independently tracking test coverage, build failure rates, time to resolution, something that you can actually track with Jira. So I think after adopting shift left testing, we saw beginning was 15, and then we were slowly going to 20 and 30% of reduction of production defects. And then there was 10 and then 20% improvement in development lifecycle times. So we also did, not just in Quantum, but I think in remember in other organizations, we made customer satisfaction surveys, and through post-release surveys, we were able to see that we are making some improvements with user feedback. We had less support issues, fewer bugs that were coming after some rollouts, and this was more smoothly. So just to maybe get more insight. Like you can measure defect density with Jira. Very easy. You just can track total number of defects raised and then use some custom fields to generate reports. Like one can also track the defect density with lines of code. Or you can even use Jira REST API with GitLab to calculate this defect density reports automatically. With test coverage, I think it's pretty straightforward. As with Playwright, you already can use JSON or HTML coverage data export. You can export it. So it's something that easily can get, like just doesn't require a lot effort to get this measurement. And then you can track and see the historical data and how it evaluates. And with the Sonar Cloud as well, it's something that you can see that after the improvements and applying like shifting quality left and basically thinking about those defects, trying to fix them as soon as possible, that would mean that you have better tracking with tools, and then those pipelines would fail, you know, in much earlier stages, and then continuously, like you see that this production defect would be something, you know, very very seldom, like that would be all almost like rarely possible, especially when everything is already set in the requirement phases and everything is kind of tested and you know, like spoken, and that is checked, then you just, you know, you still can have production bugs, but usually it's some kind of uncertainties or maybe some kind of problems with the setups. It's rather than, you know, like human errors, it's like, bugs are basically unavoidable, but you can always minimize them, you know. I think this things could help a lot, and like Jira also can share a lot of dashboards, and you can export data to BI tools with Tableau Analytics for trend analysis.
Thank you so much, Ruslan. That was really interesting. Moving on to the last question of the day, what advice would you give to other organizations that are just starting their shift left journey based on the lessons you learned from your own experiences?
I think it's important to start small and build the momentum as soon as you go. So teams, I would really suggest the teams to focus on the quick wins in the beginning, like some kind of, you can say, like low hanging fruits, like the fruit that you can, you know, take very easily. Yeah. Some kind of a small wins that don't require a lot of like technical effort, but that can showcase that this process is improving. So if you like teams are introducing more focus on the integration, like that they already may have test automation in place, but maybe it was not integrated in the CI/CD pipelines. Even if it was integrated, you can still win very easily when implementing specific checks. Like you can have you know, some quality gates. You can implement quality gates with test automation. You can add static code analysis tools as quality gate as well. This would be quite cheaply to implement. Doesn't require like a lot of training and effort. And already using static code analysis tools will kind of be a lot of focus, shifting this like focus on left. a lot. I think it's, again, I would iterate that it's important to tailor the approach with teams' maturity levels. One should actually think about how to apply specific things to the teams that they actually need. So it's important to hear the experiences, and then actually know all these voices and know what people actually need inside the teams. So it's better avoiding some kind of one size fits all strategy. So you have to be robust on that if you are implementing this shift. And as I said in the beginning, the importance is basically with shifting left is that you can you basically have much less resources, but you treat those resources well. So you have you may have like one QA engineer even shared between different teams, but then this QA expert, he's like he or she can be really not like knowledgeable about everything and can provide guidance for the teams. So it's still possible when there are multiple teams even working with one QA expert, but he's knowledgeable, he can teach them and show a lot of insights how to be independent with balancing quality. Providing robust tools and keeping them in good shape with good documentation, it's also important to have some popularity and have a good collaboration between those teams. And I think it's not just QA and development teams. I think BI or data teams can also work a lot together and gain something from each side. It's also important to measure progress with metric data and then showcase the value or shift value to the stakeholders and show this metric data to them and see they could see how it historically improves.
Thank you so much, Ruslan. Amazing insights. Thank you so much for sharing those. I'm sure that our audience would find it really helpful to learn from real-world examples that you shared, right? So excellent advice from your end. It has been an insightful session. Thank you so much, Ruslan, for sharing your incredible journey and lessons on driving quality lift. All the practical advice that you shared and the inspiring success story behind your journey so far, it has been immensely valuable. I'm sure our audience will benefit from your insights, and of course they can implement them in their workflow as well. To the audience, thank you so much for joining us today. In case you'd like to get in touch with Ruslan, we'd be tagging him in all our social media posts. So feel free to reach out to him if you'd like to have more such insightful chats with him. Thank you once again, Ruslan, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure hosting you. And stay tuned for more such exciting episodes of XP podcast series from LambdaTest. So until next time, take care and keep testing.
Thanks.